The Branstad administration is looking to shift Iowans who benefit from Medicaid to private management on January 1st. State Democrats say not so fast. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll find out what changes may be in store for Iowa's 560,000 Medicaid recipients and what the controversy is all about. I'm joined by IPR's Clay Masters, who's been following the story. Also, University of Iowa public policy expert Brian Caskey. And we'll hear the concerns of an Iowa resident whose family relies on Medicaid. Then we find out how the Iowa pilot program for business courts is doing. But first, controversy over the state's plan to privatize its Medicaid program, right after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Changes ahead for Medicaid in Iowa. Most of this hour, we'll be addressing that issue. The health care program for low-income Iowans currently has more than 560,000 recipients in the state. Perhaps you or a member of your family is one of those recipients. You want to stay tuned to listen to changes possibly coming to it. The Branstad administration is looking to shift Iowans who benefit from Medicaid to private management on January 1st. Branstad contending that the private management companies can offer more efficient, flexible service, also save money. Three leading Iowa Senate Democrats met last Wednesday in Washington with Obama administration officials who will decide whether to approve Governor Branstad's plan. The Iowa legislators want federal officials to at least slow down the shift to private Medicaid management. So this hour, we want to talk about why the change, what it might mean, and what's the controversy all about. Joining us to do that, first of all, Clay Masters, Iowa Public Radio Morning Edition host and reporter. Hi, Clay.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you. You've been following the changes to Iowa's Medicaid program for some time, since the expansions talks started way back in 2013. Get us up to date on what's been happening here. A little bit of the backstory, please.
So, yeah, whenever we start talking about a healthcare program like this, especially on the radio, it's kind of, you know, your ears can kind of glaze over. But really, what we're talking about here is when we talk about Medicaid privatization, we're talking about how the care is managed for, as you mentioned, this more than 560,000 Iowans that are low income. So they're poor, they're disabled, and many times even some of those with private insurance, if they have kids that have some kind of chronic illness, private insurance won't pick it up, so they'll go through Medicaid. Early this year, there were signals from the governor that he wanted to do this, said that it would save more than $50 million, that other states have done this. But other states really haven't done what Iowa is proposing to do by January 1st, and that's putting everyone in all at once. Now, the governor did not have to get the backing from the legislature to do this. And remember, we have a split legislature here in Iowa. Democrats control the Senate. Republicans control the House. And if we go back all the way back to 2013, the legislature made agreements on Medicaid, and that was to expand Medicaid in the state. There was this big legislative session where Iowa expanded Medicaid. Branstad, the governor, could say, hey, we didn't expand Medicaid, which you remember is a key part of the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare, while Democrats said, hey, we expanded Medicaid in the state. What they had to do then was get a waiver from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to expand Medicaid. They did this, and the Branstad administration seems confident that they'll get this waiver too. But remember, they did not get the bipartisan backing of the Senate Democrats. And so there's been times in the past where Senate Democrats and the governor have agreed on things, and here we're seeing a place where that's not the case.
And so as Democrats visiting Washington, as I mentioned, they want to slow this down or stop it in its tracks?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest concern from these people who are on Medicaid is that services will be shortchanged for profit. So some that I've spoken with have said, you know, who knows? This could be a good thing. And certainly the Department of Human Services is saying that it will be, that it will streamline services, make it easier for, say, you have five doctors that if they're under one managed care organization, that these doctors will be able to know more about what kind of services these people who are on Medicaid need to be getting. So naturally, people are going to be anxious about it. But as you mentioned, the Senate President, Pam Yoakum, as well as Senators Liz Mathis and Amanda Reagan, Mathis from Robbins, the suburb in Cedar Rapids, and Amanda Reagan's from Mason City, they met with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Remember, this is the federal organization that they need to get approval from. They said that they're concerned that there just aren't sufficient networks of healthcare providers participating in their plans. A number of healthcare providers also have voiced warnings to the federal officials, and they're all saying that it's just going too fast to meet this January 1st deadline.
Okay, thanks for that background, Clay Masters. Stay with us, please, as we talk to other folks. Brian Caskey is with us as well. Brian Caskey is Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. Brian, welcome back to our program.
Thank you for having me.
You are the person who has a lot of years of expertise in this field. We want to find out your views on this in just a moment. Heather Young, though, we want to say hello to, Iowa City resident whose family relies on Medicaid. We want to get good afternoon. And your personal story here in just a moment as well. We want to reach out to our listeners. Perhaps you're a Medicaid recipient, or you will somehow be affected, or you have questions about how you might be affected by these changes. Your comment or question, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. You may be asking yourself, since it is the governor's initiative here, why he is not at this table. Well, we did invite the governor, reached out to his office to provide someone to be part of this conversation. They declined our invitation to discuss this change and provided this statement, the statement from the governor. Iowa is taking a thoughtful approach to modernizing Medicaid, including a 2-year phase-in for our most vulnerable Medicaid patients. Governor Branstad is confident after a very encouraging meeting with Secretary Burwell last week that our patient-centered Medicaid plan will be implemented on January 1st, 2016 with our 2-year phase-in measures for our most vulnerable Medicaid patients. That's the end of the governor's office, a statement in lieu of accepting an invitation to be part of this conversation. Brian Caskey, let me start off with you as someone who studies federal, state policies that impact health and retirement of older adults, including Medicaid and Medicare. Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of the magnitude of this change.
This is a really big program for the state of Iowa. In numeric terms, Medicaid is $4.2 billion. It serves over 500,000 people here in the state of Iowa. And it also provides a source of income for many providers, including hospitals, physicians, and other practitioners who work here in the state. Just by way of comparison, I heard the other day that the University of Iowa is a $3.6 billion operation with 35,000 people served, i.e. students, and nearly 15,000 people who have their income through employment here. So it's a pretty big deal. And I think the other thing that people might want to embrace is that this isn't just health insurance for poor or disabled people. This is health insurance that steps in when typical insurance can't. So here what we're talking about are children who have parents who are working hard but are in jobs that just don't offer viable insurance options. So we automatically cover those kids regardless. The other people who benefit from Medicaid are adults who experience hardships and health instances or accidents in their life, and they just need a lot of care. A person in my family, for example, had a car accident. She sustained a traumatic brain injury and now requires daily attendant care. And that's the kind of stuff that happens to people randomly, and they just aren't ready for it, and their typical health insurance doesn't cover it. So Medicaid becomes very important for those people. And last, it's very important for older adults. It's the primary source for long-term care. That is care that's provided either in the home or in a nursing home or assisted living facility that keeps them going day to day, keeps them healthy and engaged, and becomes a critical source at the end of life for supporting their choices.
Mm-hmm. As we hear in just a moment from Heather and perhaps others who dial 1-866-780-9100 with their questions or concerns, I want to reach to you, first of all, Brian Caskey, in broad brushstrokes, as a person who has studied this area and made a career of knowing about these things. When we talk about privatizing the management of Medicaid in Iowa, what categories, what points would you want to give the most attention? Are you most concerned about?
Well, I think the first thing to embrace is this has been going on for a while here, actually, in the state of Iowa. In the past 10 years, the Medicaid program has taken several steps forward in some people's mind and toward improving the delivery of care to Medicaid recipients. They have loosened up regulations that allow individuals now to have their friends or families help with providing care. They put a lot of effort into being offering options for older adults to stay at home in the community rather than be transferred into a nursing home. And the administration, actually under previous governors, Culver and Vilsack, through the former director, Gene Gessow, made a number of efforts to bring in private companies to help with things like what's called claims processing, beneficiary engagement, and they've increased transparency. So the program actually served as a model about 10 years ago for the rest of the country for how to make use of these private corporations that are out there that have considerable expertise and can serve as subcontractors to the program. So in some sense, I just want to emphasize this just didn't come out of nowhere.
The program is not petrified. It's been changing. It's been changing, and when we hear a phrase from the governor's office, modernizing Medicaid, mm-hmm. that is a process that has been taking place over years.
Oh, yeah. Medicaid is what I call an organic being. It has in its laws ways that you can amend it and change it to keep it updated with current practices in healthcare or preferences among the patient population. You know, 20, 30 years ago, people were pretty content, for example, to move into nursing facilities in their own communities towards the end of their lives when they felt that around-the-clock care was really needed and they didn't want to burden their families. But there's been a generational shift, and now people want to stay at home as long as possible, being cared for by their friends or by their family members, and Medicaid's been responsive to that. So mm-hmm. so this is just yet another change in an organic program. I'd like to think.
Brian Caskey, so give us this your view on this latest chapter for the over 500,000 Medicaid recipients here in Iowa. How will the experience change? What are you most concerned about when we would make this change over to private hands in the management of Medicaid here in Iowa?
Well, there are benefits to this, and I think people will see that right away. The companies that are coming in, they have considerable experience handling health insurance programs in other states. They're likely to increase the efficiency of the program. People will have contact with healthcare providers. They're also likely to maintain patient and provider satisfaction. That is, they'll engage patients in unique programs and give people opportunities to pursue wellness and other cost-saving measures that you see in other state health insurance plans. And in the end, theoretically, this could be a huge cost savings for the states. In research I've done on managed care in other states, such as Colorado and California, we do find that they're able to control costs without a lot of, shall we say, negative outcomes that patients experience. But those are selective.
Are there also cases where we can point to states who have privatized management where the cost savings were not realized?
And that's the it depends part. We do see that in other states and in other forms of managed care that when we hand it over to a private organization, sometimes they don't fulfill their aspirations on the contract. Sometimes services aren't delivered in the way they used to be delivered, or people who used to be qualified for Medicaid may not be qualified now. And that's really what we're facing right now. There's a churn going on where this program, this $4.2 billion program, is experiencing a tremendous shift in who runs it. And so naturally, there's going to be a lot of local businesses who don't necessarily have experts on staff to help them navigate this change. They're feeling a lot of need for information and where to go. These are small community-based programs around the state. They don't have big budgets. They don't have a lot of administrative support. So they're kind of feeling their way through, and I think there's some trepidation out there.
Okay. Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. Clay Masters, I think you wanted to jump in here perhaps with a question or comment.
Well, I would just say, too, one thing that we haven't really brought up, too, is back in August, the Des Moines Register did an investigative report. Jason Clayworth looked into some of the past problems that some of these firms have had that have won the bid for managing the state's Medicaid system, and they found problems with either mismanagement or fraud, some of them resulting in hundreds of millions of dollars in fines or settlements paid. So there is also concerns out there about just the companies that will be taking over the management of the managed care and Medicaid. Mm.
And to finally answer your question, one of my two big concerns, to echo on what Clay said, it's not so much I don't think these companies can handle setting up contracts with providers or serving the patients well. It's the oversight of the financing and the evaluation of these contracts. What we lose in all this, if you will, distracting discussions about who's going to get signed up and what's going to happen is we still don't have a very good idea where all this $4.2 billion is going to go.
You mean when you say evaluation, you're saying we're losing the ability for oversight over a huge amount of money? You said it's larger than the budget of the University of Iowa.
Correct. And what – so financing is one thing. And so actuarials will want to come in and say, well, how did you spend the money? If you made a profit, where did that profit go? In some instances, you would expect if it was a state program, it would get turned back to the state and then we could reinvest it in programs and services. We certainly historically have not given bonuses to our Iowa Medicaid Enterprise Director for doing a good job. But in this case, when we privatize, you can expect some amount of money will go to pay or be allocated towards these companies for doing a good job. How much? I can't tell you. It's not clear to me in any of the contract work that's been going back and forth. The oversight function is probably more important because we don't know how to correct anything. If it does turn out that patients aren't getting the care they want or if providers feel that they are being excluded for one reason or another. And what you want here is a federal oversight that does fraud and abuse investigation. And in fact, the Center for Medicaid Services has established 20 of these units across the country in 20 different states. And what's good about them is that they're independent. They're agents that don't have to feel like they can't, conduct a thorough investigation and report back what they find. What we currently have in place is the state itself will retain evaluation and oversight groups. They will contract with these groups, and then these groups are expected to give some sort of feedback about how things are going. And hopefully I don't have to point out there's might be an inherent bias in this relationship and that the state gives these people money. And I don't expect these people are going to look too closely in anything that might put their contracts in jeopardy.
Okay. We're talking about changes ahead for Medicaid in Iowa. The Branstad administration looking to shift Iowans who benefit from Medicaid. It's over 500,000 of us to private management as of January 1st. And Heather Young, if I can ask you to wait a moment. You're in our Iowa City studio, but Laura, I think, has to be off in just a moment. She dialed in from Des Moines. And Laura, you are a Medicaid recipient?
I am, and I apologize. I'm in the middle of a car wash. I didn't know you were going to get to me this quickly.
Yeah, a car wash.
Yes,
okay. There's a first time for everything. Go ahead.
Yeah. So both my daughters and I are on Medicaid, and I'm a working mother. I just got a letter in the mail just about 3 or 4 days ago telling me that I have to kick some sort of something out. I'm not a doctor, but some sort of, managed care person or group. And if I didn't do this by the 17th of December, then I'm going to get fined or something.
Mm.
So I kind of have a question about that. But the other thing I wanted to mention is in Kansas, one of the same companies that is before that is doing business here, and it is business for them, is that they have lost money every year that they have been doing CanCare for Kansas, which is the Kansas version of what they want to do here. So I'm wondering if it's a for-profit business and you lose money 4 years in a row, how is that good for anybody? And then the third thing is, for women, for families that have special needs children, for instance, a friend of mine has been assigned three different, I guess, HMOs. I don't know what the terminology is here or what their acronyms are, but she's got three children and three different things
okay.
she has to go
okay.
through.
So okay, you've loaded us up with a number of questions, Laura. We'll do the best we can in the time we have here, but I'm going to throw that to Brian Caskey.
Very quickly, the state is doing what it should be doing, and the companies are just simply trying to assume that they'll start January 1st. That is, they're engaging you with these letters, informing you you need to sign up with one of their plans. Second thing, the concerns about what happens in other states are exactly what I'm trying to point out. Because they didn't have a good accounting system and an evaluation system, it took them a little too long to figure out that they weren't achieving the outcomes stated.
Okay. Thank you for that call, Laura in Des Moines. We want to go to Heather Young in our Iowa City studio, Iowa City resident whose family relies on Medicaid. We can talk a little more after the break, Heather. But if you could start off by describing your family situation and how Medicaid impacts your lives. I understand that three generations of your family receive assistance from programs that are in some way funded by the state Medicaid program.
Absolutely. In our family situation, my parents, elderly parents, receive Medicaid services in the nursing home that they're in, and my mother-in-law also. They're all three, both of my parents and my mother-in-law in the same nursing home. All three of them are dependent on Medicaid. My husband and I have three adult children who have medical conditions that are also covered under Medicaid, and I have a granddaughter who has autism who's also received services under Medicaid. We are the poster family for boots on the ground. We are the people this is going to affect.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about people who have careers in understanding the policies and stuff. I have a career, a lifetime career, in understanding how this stuff actually works.
This is very real to you and your family. So what are your specific concerns when you hear about the governor's plan of privatizing the management?
Well, you know, all of these, when we talk about Medicaid, most people think of hospital care. What happens when you're having a medical emergency? And we think of healthcare as being in a hospital or doctor's office. In my life experience, Medicaid covers everything that happens after you leave the hospital, after the trauma, after the sickness. Once you've been diagnosed, you have a disability, you are no longer able to work. Your life is irreparably changed, and you can no longer take care of yourself. That's where Medicaid comes in and provides you with the services you need to survive. We're not even talking, you know.
I need to rush you on a little bit. We're coming up to a break, but we'll talk about it after the break. But in a nutshell, what are your concerns?
That absolutely all of this funding and the profits that are being guaranteed to these companies are going to happen on the backs of my family members.
That you'll be shorted in what way?
In services and in access.
Okay. And perhaps have no recourse?
None.
Or
there is no
little
oversight.
Recourse when you find you're not as satisfied as the previous?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk about it when we come back in just a moment. We're Heather Young, Iowa City resident, a family relying there, as she described, on Medicaid. Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa, also Clay Masters with us, who has been covering this issue. What is this issue? Changes ahead for Medicaid in Iowa. Affecting over 500,000 Iowans who benefit from Medicaid. The Branstad administration looking to shift Iowans who benefit from Medicaid to private management on January 1st. Are you a Medicaid recipient? Will you be affected by these changes? What are your questions? Your comment or question on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Tweet us at IPR Talk or give us a ring. Toll free, 1-866-780-9100. Back in just a moment. We're back midstream in River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, talking about changes ahead for Medicaid in Iowa. Possibly we'll talk about what could be roadblocks ahead of those changes in just a moment. But it's a health care program for low-income Iowans, currently more than 500,000 recipients in our state. And our governor's administration is looking to shift Iowans who benefit from Medicaid to private management as of January 1st. We're talking about some of the concerns that people are raising, those who receive it, also public policy expert with us this hour. I want to mention again that the governor, we reached out to the governor's office to be part of this conversation. They declined our invitation to discuss this change that they are initiating. We want to hear from you. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go back to Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. He's has spent many years studying federal and state policies that impact health and retirement of older adults, including Medicaid and Medicare. Let's talk a little bit about this is not just a case of the Branstad administration against Democrats here. Who are the other parties involved here that are concerned about this change?
Yeah, the state's going ahead, as they should, with the assumption that this will be approved. But there is a protracted federal oversight process, and it may be a little bit presumptuous to assume this is just going to get a gold star and the state will be told they can go forward. There are a number of people in the federal government who need to look in to make sure that they are upholding federal regulations and administering the program. So that's one potential point of block of the program's progress. A second one is a number of other organizations here in Iowa who have really taken exception to how the state has moved forward with this. And one of the most notables is the Iowa Hospital Association. They simply are not on board with this plan and are delaying the process of signing up for.
For what reasons?
I think they too feel that this has been hurried. They haven't been engaged appropriately. For example, the state, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, the state had an opportunity to draw down what's called a planning grant. And this planning grant was designed to help the state leadership in health care decide how to best move into the new environment created under the Obama administration. And so far, the state's received nearly $40 million to convene a number of experts within our own state to decide how best to move forward. And that whole planning process seems to be separated from or not included in this movement into modernization. And I think maybe there's some concerns about reconciling what has been discovered or determined to be good directions to go by the people here in Iowa versus where they think the managed care companies might take it. So they're very concerned. And then the other group, back to Clay's point, the other group of people who are objecting to this are the other companies who did not get awarded the contracts. They are calling into question the process that was used by the state to identify the four companies that received this award. They think there were some violations that, you know, suggested that this wasn't done above board or in the most fair and balanced manner.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100. Let's try to quickly get to some calls. I'll ask you to be brief, John, but we're glad you're joining us from Oskaloosa.
Yes, thank you. This is very relevant. Just today, this morning, I was working on this problem. The sister-in-law, a relative, was severely injured in an accident and a brain injury. Lost her insurance, Medicaid, and she got this document that said you've got to December 17th to make a choice of one of these four companies. I've spent all morning tracking down, talking to on the phone to the representatives of three of these so far, trying to find out if the physician, the brain physician that she sees, is covered in their programs, and I've gotten absolutely nowhere. A couple of them saying, well, we're still loading or still trying. They can't even tell me if the hospital that she was associated with or has been working with is covered. And I just wondered what advice a person might have should take with regard to meeting this December 17th deadline in a way that would meet the needs of someone like that who's looking to continue the work of a very capable physician.
Okay, John in Oskaloosa, thank you. I'm not sure what Brian can say to that, but
what's happening here is they're trying to get things lined up administratively. So they're asking you to choose one of the plans to align yourself with now, but your actual service providers won't change until next fiscal year. So please be, you know, assured that they're not going to stop providing you care from the provider you currently go to on January 1st. What they're trying to do is get you to learn about these companies and pick one that you think might do the best job of meeting your sister-in-law's needs. Now, that's a challenge a lot of people face when they go and search for this information about, you know, what these companies do and how well they matched up to what they need. That's been a challenge. And that's where I think a lot of people are moving forward with a lot of trepidation. They don't know what they're jumping into. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, you know, by having four separate companies, and this goes along with the ideology I think that's behind some of this, is it does allow the Medicaid program some internal competition. That is, some of these companies are going to have to pay attention to each other, because if they're doing a better job of providing care to your sister-in-law and folks here in Iowa City, then more people are going to sign up for those particular companies. Word will get out.
Okay, John in Oskaloosa, thank you for that great question. 1-866-780-9100. Back to Heather Young, who is an Iowa City resident, if you were with us in the first half, whose family really relies on Medicaid in so many ways. Heather Young, what did you want to add?
I think the caller totally does a perfect example showing the nightmare that this situation is. The one thing that has been discussed here is how different organizations and groups are all upset about this and not liking it. The one group we haven't talked about is the people who are actually supposed to be receiving services from this imaginary, undefined, new way of doing things. This letter, we got the same letter. You know what? It means bupkis to me. It's insane, because when you call these companies, there's no program. There's nothing formally set.
Is that right,
set.
Brian? No.
They have processes in place both electronically and in person, but I'd have to agree with Heather. When you're in a program for as long as you've been with, and you've had a certain you're accustomed to having care provided in a certain way, when they put you on a very short timeline and say, oh, by the way, you have to make a decision about a new company, oh, and you have to do it in the next few weeks, it puts a lot of pressure both on the individual beneficiary to learn and on the companies to recognize they better do a good job of informing people. I hate to show my age here, but this reminds me of what happened back in 2004 when Medicare, lock, stock, and barrel, handed over their prescription drug program.
Under President Bush.
And I remember having Thanksgiving dinner with my in-laws, and it was very difficult to navigate the change in pharmacy benefits, because we had to read all this stuff and it was hard to understand. For better or worse, 2 years later, the program got up and running and it still exists today.
But two years later.
Understood.
So that is certainly in the living memory of many of our listeners, Brian Caskey. So are you saying that the change coming January 1st, this hurry up change, is going to be more momentous, more impactful than that change back in the early 2000s in terms of getting it up on its feet, if this is to be the way forward?
It's a similar approach in that what we're doing is taking a public program, a program that's financed through tax dollars and historically has had a tremendous amount of public input and oversight, and we're handing it over to a private company. A private company in which we can't necessarily have the same opportunity to look into what they're doing. So is it a magnitude of difference? It's similar. It's a progression in what we've seen in the healthcare industry for about a dozen years now, in that we're taking public dollars, we're moving it into these companies. And, you know, I hate to say it, but it depends. Some of them do a very good job. I've seen managed care companies improve on what the state previously offered, but I've also seen examples where it hasn't met expectations.
Okay, Brian Caskey is with us, professor of health management and policy at the University of Iowa, giving us his expertise on the proposed changes ahead for Medicaid in Iowa, namely the privatization of management to over 500,000 recipients in the state. We have a tremendous outpouring of people on our phones, also our Facebook page here. We're not going to get to everyone. We'll try to get to as many as possible. We want to mention that those who are participating, please get right to the nugget of what you want to talk about so we can include as many voices and perspectives as possible. Lana is dialing in from Johnston. What's your view, Lana?
Hi, yes. My name's Lana Dobson, and my son Martin, 3-year-old medically fragile child, who receives Medicaid through the Iowa waiver system. Martin has two metabolic conditions that are extremely rare. We've sought care in Iowa. We went through the usual channels, and we didn't have the best of luck. We ended up in the ICU. We ended up with the wrong treatments because the providers that we had weren't knowledgeable in his conditions. So we've since sought care from Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, which is currently covered under Iowa Medicaid. We finally found some providers that have some knowledge about his condition. But now, you know, we're faced with losing those providers within the year, going back to a system that had him on medications where his kidneys were failing rather quickly. That's my first concern. My second concern is he has these metabolic disorders, and he's on a lot of what we call medical foods. Mm-hmm. Those are the treatments for his metabolic disorders. They keep him out of the ICU. The state of Iowa does not typically cover medical foods, and so we go through an exception policy system. It takes about 3 months, and then they cover our foods with doctor's exceptions and letters explaining his conditions. With this new system, I'm really worried that there is nothing in place. It's been rushed to come up in January, and I don't know where we'll be when we need those medications. Without those medications, what I see, and without this specialized care, I see us in the ICU. And to me, I financially see that as a poor decision. That's going to be much more expensive for the state mm-hmm. than the savings they would receive in running these MCOs. So you've got a lot of medically fragile children, and I really foresee that as the result of this quick push to get the MCOs up and running.
Okay. Lana in Johnston, thank you for your perspective. So this is what you were talking about, Heather Young, that Medicaid
Absolutely.
Is much larger than simply going to the hospital. It's a huge program, as a $4-plus billion program would be
Absolutely.
In the state. Yeah. Brian, we're hearing some concerns. We won't hear all of them from the phones
Sure.
here, but it sounds like a lot of people are very, very worried about what's to come here.
Well, this is – I hate to say it, but this is the process, and the state is following process in the sense that they're giving people notice. It's called due notice of their intent to move into this private Medicaid contract environment. And as part of that process, they want you to identify which company. And again, because we don't know what these companies are really going to offer, that makes it a very challenging proposition.
But here's the problem. The companies don't know what they're going to offer.
Exactly.
It's not just a lack of communication. They don't know.
Let's get in another caller. Kurt is with us from Vinton. Kurt, what's your question?
Well, I think, you know, we're talking about $4-plus billion. Affecting the most vulnerable members of our state, our society, for theoretical savings. Somebody says it's a part of the process, but I want to understand where the rush is coming from, because there's nothing in the process that says it needs to be a rush.
Okay,
Absolutely.
Kurt, Brian, how do you address that
question?
Why the rush? Is this an ideological rush? Is that what's pushing it?
In certain models of policymaking, you do want to keep things limited for public input, because under situations in which you have very controversial policy change, the longer it gets exposed to debate, the less likely it's to move forward. But
Good.
I want
that
wanna,
means it's bad policy,
right? But I want to point out something where we're at right now is at the federal level, they're reviewing this application and they've been soliciting people's input on this. And that's why your senators you referred to went out to Washington to meet with them, because at the federal level, they do want to take a look at what's going on here. I mean, President Obama made his, if you will, ascent to the White House through Iowa, promising good health care. I don't think this administration wants to forget about that.
Mm-hmm. So to follow up on that, because we're running short of time, we won't get to all these people here. Those listening with concerns, as we've heard from Heather, from Lana, what can they do to make their voices?
Contact CMS and let them know that you are concerned. And what CMS is going to do here in the next few, it could be weeks.
How do you contact CMS?
I hate to refer to one of your competitors, but the Des Moines Register has been running a good series of articles.
We partner with them a lot, so okay. I wouldn't describe them as a competitor.
Well, they have a number of articles that highlight who to contact at CMS via email or phone. So the key here is in the next 2 weeks to 2 months, the federal government is going to issue something back to the state based on their review of the application and all the feedback they've heard. And they're going to tell the state, we need you to make some changes. It's called the change request. And for example, in the case of the people we've heard from, they at CMS said, we're concerned that you haven't lined up providers. Show us that you've done this. And so the real key will be how the state responds to that change request and how stringent the federal government's going to be. So on one hand, the change request may be demonstrate that you've addressed this person's need down in Oskaloosa because you've lined up a sufficient number of neurologists. The state may write back something very, how shall we say, soft and says, well, it is our intent to have people lined up by June 30th. Or the federal government says, you need to present us evidence before January 1st. If you don't, we'll fail you. So it really depends on how strong CMS is going to be in these change requests.
Okay, we want to hear from Heather Young and Clay Masters here to round out the hour. But Heather Young, what's next for your family? How will you go about finding providers through this? How are you feeling your way through these possible changes?
We have no idea what we're going to do because Medicaid is our safety net. My husband and I are doing everything we can to provide for our family members, but we really feel like we are piloting a ship, and with the way this thing is coming down, it is going to torpedo our ship, and there is no safety net for us. I don't know what we're going to do, and I don't think we're unusual in our feelings of we have no idea.
Okay. Clay Masters, you've been listening to the whole hour and provide us with some valuable input there at the beginning. You've been reporting on this issue. A lot of controversy here, a lot of passion here, a lot of worry and concern.
I would note, too, that the governor's office has wanted to make this work for a long time. They've been talking with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid probably since the beginning of the year when this plan first came forward, and the waiver has not been approved yet. So that makes me wonder how likely they are to approve it, you know, fully the way that the governor's office likes it. You know, one thing we didn't bring up was the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid also had a conference call where people could call in and voice their concerns. 500 people, I think, were on the call. There was no mute button. People were trying to all talk over each other. The senators that went out and talked with the feds earlier this month, you know, Senate President Pam Yoakum said she walked out of there feeling a lot better, knowing that they had a good handle on what's going on. But as we've been saying throughout this whole show, the state is moving forward with this January 1st deadline in mind. And it looks like chaos into the holidays, as far as I can tell.
Brian, if we can go to you to sum up what we've been talking about here and perhaps give people some real tangible help. We couldn't answer all the questions. There's certainly a lot of cases out there, family stories that we can only imagine. Where can people go to find some more resources here to inform themselves and weigh in once they've informed themselves better?
Well, the state itself has done a very good job of being open about the managed care waiver program. So go to their website. It's up there. It's accessible. They've also put out a lot of communications about where they see this happening. Again, those are on the DHS website for the state of Iowa. You also might want to take a look at CMS, the Center for Medicaid Services. They, too, have websites that will show you how these waivers have unfolded in other states. And like I've said, it's been both positive and negative. And last, again, to give a shout-out to the media in general, both to you all here at Public Radio and at the Des Moines Register, this has been a great case study in how the media can help the public understand what's going on, because without it, this would have been handed over to a company, and we would only be finding out about this a year from now.
Remind you that as this hour ends, the conversation continues on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Here's a sample, a post from Amelia on this very topic. I am a medical student who plans to make a career working in Iowa. This transition will have lasting consequences on my practice and my patients' access to care, and the lack of transparency in the process does not inspire confidence. The healthcare landscape should continue to evolve. but it is vital there be an open forum to discuss these developments so that those involved in the healthcare field, as well as the recipients of care, can have an active role in the process. They are concerned there about transparency, which you mentioned earlier, Brian Caskey. Thank you very much for this. We'll certainly follow up with this. A lot of interest in this. Brian Caskey, Associate Professor of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. Heather Young, thank you for coming into our Iowa City studio as well. And I want to mention that we did reach out to the governor's office to be part of this conversation. They declined our invitation to discuss this change this hour. And, of course, thanks to Clay Masters in Des Moines, our Morning Edition host and a reporter who's been following these changes. Thank you very much, Clay.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. And I also will say that there is a Medicaid meeting today in Davenport at 5 o'clock. So we'll just throw that in there, too.
Okay, plenty of ways to weigh in there. Tomorrow on this program, perhaps you heard the news that in the polls, Ted Cruz has surged to a virtual tie with Donald Trump. That's according to the latest Quinnipiac poll of likely Republican caucus goers here in Iowa. We'll review what the poll findings mean. Also, Quinnipiac out with another poll early tomorrow morning on the Democratic side of likely caucus goers here in Iowa. Tomorrow, I'll be joined by political analyst Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College and Hans Hassel of Cornell College. We'll look at the week in politics, also many other aspects, including more reaction to Syrian refugees coming to the United States. Politics Day tomorrow on this program. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.